You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Dr. Jens Jerndl. Dr. Jens is a distinguished holistic thinker and futurist. He was born in Sweden, but considers himself a world citizen. His professional experience embraces education, international law, political science, economics, diplomacy, business, astrology, and holistic medicine. His present focus is what he calls the invisible reality and the presently emerging Aquarian paradigm. He's just published a new book titled Cracking the Rainbow Code to Access the Secrets of Creation. So let's welcome this multifaceted paradigm shifter to the show now. Hi, Dr. Jens, how are you?
Hi, Lance. Thank you very much. I'm fine. Very excited to be on your show.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you. You're quite an interesting character. You've done a lot of different things, and I've just finished your book, and I really loved it. It was quite a mind-bending and informationally fulfilling read.
I'm glad to hear that. Thank you for saying so.
Oh, you're welcome. Now, just before we get into some of the stuff that I wanted to ask you about that's in the book, which seem to be common questions that we all have lately about consciousness and shifting paradigms and the rest, I'm kind of curious what led you to write the book.
Well, in a way, I can say that this book is the summary of more than 50 years of thinking and studying, and it all started when I was studying law at the University of Lund in Sweden. Mm-hmm. I took a course in parapsychology. I was 19 at the time, and to this day I have no idea how it happened, because in my background nothing would suggest that, you know, I would think for a second about this. It just didn't exist, period. But I took this course, and it seemed the most natural thing in the world. And I immediately started to explain all these phenomena, like telepathy and psychometry and clairvoyance, which is now called remote viewing. In sort of scientific terms, and it seemed to me quite easy to understand it, because telepathy is like a kind of radio, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so on. That was one thing, of course, that I couldn't make sort of sense of, and that was precognition, how you could see something or know something that had not yet happened. And of course, thinking about that, I realized that our conception of time is, you know, we don't really know what time is, and that's the big mystery for me, really. I have gotten into that quite a lot, and I have a few different thoughts about that or explanations, but I haven't quite cracked that code yet.
Ah. did you, I know I read this somewhere, but I had a note where I found it, but it seems that I read somewhere in your book that you had a life-changing experience during the 1970s. Is that accurate or not?
Yes, it is, actually. That's when I I realized the fact of reincarnation and the immortality of the soul. And it all happened, you know, in a sort of synchronistic way, without planning anything at all. It just came to me. And it was a series I traveled to the United States for the first time in my life. And then I came back later the same year, and I traveled to Sri Lanka and Indonesia, which I've done often, also twice during that year. And each of those trips sort of added a piece of the puzzle, as it were. And after that, you know, that's the only thing that makes sense to me.
Yes, well, I totally agree with you. And many people, and quite a few of my guests, have had near-death experiences or out-of-body experiences. So they actually have described other worlds that they've been to, and they seem to return a changed person, always for the better, more caring about humanity and other people and less self-centered and so on.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And I love the paranormal studies. I kind of fell into those about 10 years ago, and I just loved it, you know, just everything I could read and find and groups on the internet and so on and so forth. So I'm definitely a believer. But you mention in your book, too, the importance of not taking other people's beliefs and thinking for yourself. I think that's really important. Do you want to elaborate on that just a bit?
Well, I think we are in our education, of course, is not set up to make us think for ourselves.
It's, right.
You know, well, this is changing, I believe. In the new paradigm will require a completely new education. And, of course, just the presence of the Internet means that the old education is already sort of... It doesn't make any sense any longer.
Yeah,
I lost the thread a little bit. I was always sort of always questioned authorities, even at school, which wasn't very popular, obviously. As I grew up, at least, and I think it's still the same thing in Sweden, the impression one has is that, you know, people are not supposed to question anything. They're supposed to sit down in the boat and keep quiet and do as they're told. And it didn't quite fit my personality, so I never did that. And I do think that one of the things we need to introduce in education is to teach people to question, to think for themselves, and creativity, which is another thing that has been really, I think, on purpose, left out of the old educational system.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I totally agree with you. In fact, if I didn't know better, I would probably be led to believe that the educational system is intentionally being formed in a way so that it doesn't educate unless people are actually getting access to good, solid, truthful information.
But of course, the Internet has changed everything.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably the greatest piece of the paradigm shift so far. And the world is completely different now from what it was even 20 years ago. And it's going on. I mean, it's continuing, and it's accelerating, I believe. And that is the great paradigm shift, which I'm writing about in my latest book, which I've just finished, which isn't out yet.
What is going to be the title of that book?
Paradigm Pulse: Sensing the Surge of Change.
Ah. Well, you know, there's quite a bit of. Chatter on the internet now about 2012 and the Mayan calendar and various prophecies that seem to be coming together, including biblical prophecies, that all seem to kind of point in the same direction, and that brings in astrology as well. You've done research in astrology. Do you see the connections in the stars that are aligning in a way that will help us move forward?
Oh, yes, yes. Well, actually, I have, I think I've cracked the code about the Aquarian age. I call it the Aquarian paradigm, and it's a general paradigm that sort of changes our whole outlook, our whole world view. And in my opinion, it started already 240 years ago or so. Actually, with the U.S. Declaration of Independence, and that the whole movement, and then the French Revolution, And it all sort of came together, and that's exactly what I'm explaining in my new book, which isn't out yet, which will be out in a matter of a month or two, I think.
Wonderful.
And so that's what is going on as far as I'm concerned. Now, the Mayan calendars, I haven't really studied them, but I've read a little bit about it. And the interesting thing with at least Carl Johan Kallmann's understanding of it, compatriot of mine, actually, it is all about the evolution of human consciousness in waves and sort of accelerating waves, as it were. And that each wave is apparently much shorter than the previous wave. Mm. And that we've now reached the end of times, as the Mayans call it. And to me, it makes a lot of sense with what we are seeing right now and with the, Aquarian paradigm taking over, which is happens about the same time as far as I can see it. Because imagine the difference in human consciousness only, say, 30 years ago, before the internet, before mobile phones, before satellites and all that, and now, where everybody practically from the age of 4 or whenever the children start using the computers nowadays, has practically all information possible, well, not all, but, you know, an enormous amount of information practically at their fingertips, an instant. Yeah.
Certainly a lot more than what we see is available on the many hundreds of cable channels that we pay for.
Oh, my God, yes. Don't tell me about them.
I would call that brainwashing more than anything, but there are some fun shows on television, I have to admit. Now, you travel the world. You're living in Argentina right now. I imagine that's a beautiful spot to live. And when you travel to these other countries and cities around the world, doing your lectures and the rest of it, do you notice over time a difference in the level of consciousness or the awakening of the people that you meet during these travels?
Yes, definitely. Now, obviously, it depends a little on the people you surround yourself with.
Because right.
There have always been conscious people, more or less. But my impression is that it is spreading now and very, very fast to the broad masses. You know, thanks to television, to some extent, but not very much. As we discussed, they don't really bring out a lot of truth.
Right.
But especially thanks to the internet and sites like YouTube and Facebook and all that. People communicate and talk to each other and spread the word, which the mainstream media will never touch.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. When your chapter one begins with a story about the dreaming child, I thought that was a really interesting story that you shared about your son. Would you care to talk about that chapter a little bit?
Yes, it was actually what happened was my son was had a nightmare. He was about 3, and he came running to my bed, and was upset. When he had sort of calmed down and I wanted to put him back again, he didn't want to and said, "No, Dad, I don't want to. There is a dream in my bed." And so, of course, he understood.
BBS Radio.
Well, we had a little technical glitch, and I apologize for any silence on the line, but we have Dr. Jens back, and he's going to continue where we left off talking. So, Dr. Jens, would you continue about wherever we were?
Yes, well, I was talking about my son's dream, where he located the dream to the bed, where he dreamt it, and didn't want to go back to the bed because of that.
Right.
And then from there, I discussed in the book, this is in the first chapter of Cracking the Rainbow Code, to the concept of non-locality, which has everything to do with consciousness, with the soul, because I see those as non-physical, as non-material, and as outside and independent of the space-time continuum of our physical universe. And to continue this thread, I had a difficult time when I was teaching medical students in Sri Lanka to make them understand that information is non-material and cannot be expressed in, you know, material terms as such. They need a vehicle or a storage device, which are all material, but the information itself is totally non-material and does not obey the rules of the physical universe. This is very difficult to understand for someone who's brought up in the Western sort of materialistic mentality.
Right.
With modern physics that believes that matter is the original thing and everything came out of matter. And of course, I say that seeing the world in that way is exactly the same as thinking, believing that it is the cart that pushes the horse forward rather
right,
than the horse
right.
that is pulling the cart.
Right.
And so,
absolutely.
So, yeah. And so the non-locality is in a sense, a consequence or maybe a proof, if you like, of the non-material, of the sort of that fact that the soul, the information, is non-material and is independent of our material universe. And to me, the soul is really a form of information, and I also say that information is necessary for any physical manifestation because it does give the coordinates, it determines form, the shape, the function, everything, that is information. But it is immaterial. And that information, as far as I'm concerned, can also be called the soul of any object, of anything material, anything physical. I don't know if this makes any sense to you, but you're welcome to question.
Yes, it does. I've thought for a long time that we actually are made manifest out of the invisible realms, and one of the problems that we have is falling prey to believing what we see, and then that's all there is. But so many quantum physicists and scientists are now saying that there are multiple dimensions and that consciousness exists prior to and creates at the level of thought or faster the material world.
And exactly, yes.
Yeah,
that's my opinion also.
Yeah, you met Dr. Niels Bohr, I believe, who used the analogy about the atomic as above, so below. The atom instantly communicates with one, you know, the other part, even if it's across the universe. Didn't you mention something like that in the book?
Yes, well, that's Bell's theorem, which says that two paired particles, once they are sort of coupled, and if they are spread across the universe, and one changes spin, the other one changes spin at the same instant.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So it's some kind of unity between them, regardless of the distance, which is not communication in our normal sense, because it is not information that is sent from one end of the universe to the other, but it's just there. And of course now with quantum physics, I don't like the term quantum mechanics. I think it's
yeah, right.
It's a misnomer.
Right.
Never there was one.
Yeah.
But anyway, and of course, quantum may not be quite the right word either, but this is
right,
the one
right.
We have. And so that, of course, shows us that there's more to the universe than the classical physics could explain.
And you also talk about this being a holographic reality and the universal hologram. That is, this, which is related to what we're talking about, that from one small, tiny fragment, a grain of sand, everything can be recreated. Am I reading that correctly?
Everything can be recreated from a grain of sand, but for instance, supposedly, a complete human being or any living being can be recreated from just the DNA in one single cell of that body, any cell, which is rather remarkable. I mean, it doesn't make too much sense from the materialistic point of view. But there it is. The information, the complete information for the entire organism is stored in each and every cell that belongs to that organism. And, of course, this also shows, I think, that we cannot, well, we can understand, of course, if we really can read the DNA information. But what I meant to say is that each cell is constructed or created to order for the organism as a whole, as a servant to the purpose of that organism. And it's not as if you...
Well, so here we are again after another pause in the universal scheme of things. The gods of Skype are not smiling on us tonight, so they're throwing lightning bolts.
So, not,
we're going to give it one more try here, and if it drops off again, then that will just be a sign from the gods. So let's see, where are we? Where were we? Where can we go? Dr. Jens.
Yes.
Well, we were talking about
We were talking about the holistic, the holographic nature of the universe, as it were. Means that the entire information for the whole organism is stored in each and every part of that organism, for instance. And this is true of the human being, where the DNA holds, in every single cell, holds the complete information for the entire organism. And we can see that on many different levels also. One way which the physicists may not think is very appropriate, I don't know, but to me, the atom is very similar to the solar system that it is part of. And, of course, in the human body, where we have been working with holistic medicine, we have what is called zone therapy or reflexology, which is based on the fact that in each and every part of the body, I'm not talking about the cells now, but like the feet or the hands or the back or the gum or practically any part of the body, the scalp, you have zones that correspond to all the other parts of the body. And by treating these zones, you actually treat that the corresponding part of the body. And it works. It's very effective.
Well, you know, in the Western form of medicine is probably mostly left-brained in
yes.
that it's really designed around the paradigm of sales and greed and
yeah.
keeping people locked into treatments and medicines that they probably don't even need and that are maybe even damaging to the body.
Yes.
You mentioned the split between the left and right brain. We could talk about that as well and the healing that needs to occur between those two and the pharmaceutical companies that are pretty much running the medical community.
Yes, absolutely. That's, there you touched on one of my hobby horses.
Well, it's one of mine, too.
I've been into holistic medicine for like 20 years, and of course I have been able to see a lot of things. And it's getting worse, I think. As you said, it's based on greed, and it's completely materialistic. And they're extremely skilled in some things, in type of repair and emergency. We mustn't take that away from them.
And right,
when it
right.
comes to when it comes to chronic or degenerative illnesses, they often do more harm than good, actually, because they don't understand it. Also, they have a sort of philosophy which as we mentioned before, only takes into account the left brain, and of course that is only half of the human being, and in
right.
a sense, in this context, perhaps the least important half at that.
Right. And as we both know, and the listeners probably know too, we've been dominated by the left brain and a male controlled society probably since the beginning of time. Other than the brief moments when there's been some kind of a divine feminine influence, which has been taken over and kind of wallpapered over, I think that that's going to be returning as part of the new shifts that are going on right now.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. That's part of the Aquarian paradigm, actually, that I'm writing about in my new book. And of course, the Aquarian paradigm is bringing in the equality principle, but the equality of everybody and especially between sexes and races and, you know. So that's where the female becomes as honored and as important as the male.
Right.
And we're seeing that, of course. It's happening.
Well, yeah, we're not burning witches at the stake anymore, are we?
No.
I'd say that's progress.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned the Aquarian paradigm. There's so many different views on when the Aquarian Age starts. I remember the play Hair in Hollywood, in Los Angeles, played many years ago, and I went to see it, and they have that song, you know, when the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter, blah, blah, blah. Well, when does this actually happen? Are we in the beginning of the Aquarius Age, or where are we?
Well, yes, that's exactly what my new book is about. Paradigm Pulse, Sensing the Surge of Change. And I've cracked that code, actually. And I have found that the Aquarian Age began to express itself in the mid-18th century. And the first sort of important expression of that was the U.S. Declaration of Independence.
Oh.
And the U.S. Constitution, followed by the French Revolution. And the Aquarian paradigm has, shall we say, two main strains, as it were. One is the social one, which has to do with equality, abolition of slavery, democracy, universal suffrage, and all that, and respect for the individual. And the other one is the technological one, which is based on electricity, which was discovered basically in the 18th century, and Benjamin Franklin, who was an Aquarian, Einstein, his birth son, as we know, invented the lightning rod, which is an early understanding of natural electricity. And, of course, he was one of the principal ideologists behind the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
Right, right.
And so that's when it started. And the steam engine was invented more or less at the same time. Well, it was invented perhaps a little earlier, but it was sort of perfected for industrial use at about this time. And that was what laid the basis for the industrial era, which brought together collectives of workers and made it possible for the masses to raise its standard of living eventually. And that's part of it. And then all the technological development that started then, basically, well, I mean, yeah, something had been on the agenda a little earlier, of course, but it really got going at that time with electricity, and then communication is one of the main principles of the paradigm, but especially connecting separate entities. And, of course, communication is something that has taken off exponentially since then, and it's happening by waves also, by decades basically, not exact decades, but roughly. And it's a very interesting thing actually, and I explain it all in this book. And of course the social side has to do with the equality and the respect for all kinds of people.
Mm. Now, before we go on much further, just in case the gods of Skype are not smiling on us, would you tell people where they can reach you, either by email or by your website?
Oh, yes. Well, my website, I'm setting up a new one for the paradigm shift, but it's not active yet, so I won't give that, I think. My old website, where the information is at least, is the www.jerndal, that is my surname, jerndal.net.
Ah.
And the book that is out now is Cracking the Rainbow Code, and that has also a lot of stuff about the new paradigm, but it's not really about the new paradigm, it's about what should I call the essence and functioning of the universe and at the basis of consciousness.
It's a very hopeful vision for the future, most assuredly. You know, it's you bring up a lot of points in the book that are reiterate or reinforce some of the previous things that some people have said, and you've broken new ground as well. So there's a lot of meat in the book. And one of the things that you talked about was crystalline technology and the paranormal and psychic realms. Do you want to talk a little bit about the crystalline technology?
Well, could you specify that a little bit? I'm not quite sure what you're referring to.
Well, let's see. Hold on a second. I've got to look at my notes.
Well, crystals, of course, are that is the basis of all computer technology, of the memory.
That's it. That was it.
because the computer memory consists of silicon, as we know. And silicon is a little sand crystal, and that is its capacity is to absorb, store, and re-emit information.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, of course, also the explanation of homeopathy, which I talk about in the book as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the radio started with a crystal. as we all, well, maybe we don't know that anymore, but those who are old enough. Well, there won't be many left, I suppose, who experience that kind of radio. But
oh, I remember the glowing bulbs.
It was actually just a crystal that could, you know, transform the sound and transmit it. And so the crystals have a very, very remarkable quality. And water also has these remarkable qualities.
Have you become familiar with the work of Dr. Emoto? Matsuro Emoto, who was the one who vibrated water at certain frequencies and froze it, and came up with different patterns that proves, for without a doubt, that that even just a printed word affects water. The assumption being that there's a consciousness in water that resonates at a certain frequency if you program it to do so.
BBS Radio.com.
So here we are again. Oh, we're having a wonderful time tonight. We're talking with to Dr. Jens Jørndal, and we're discussing consciousness in water and various other things. I apologize for the breakups, but as I said, the gods of Skype are not smiling on us tonight, so there's a reason for everything. But shall we continue on, Dr. Jens?
Oh, yes, sure.
As long as we can, and if it unless it drops again. This is going to be an interesting show. It'll be very memorable for everybody, I think. What would you like to talk about? Is there something?
I think we have covered a bit of ground. Now, what I have found is obviously that, I think we mentioned that, that the invisible reality is the really important one, that
right.
It precedes the invisible reality, as I call it, precedes, determines, and actually causes whatever is visible and physical, you know. When people ask me, what do you mean by the invisible reality, I say, well, there are two sides to it. One is energy, electricity, magnetism. They're all invisible, but they are at the basis of everything that is visible. And the other one, of course, is thoughts and emotions, which are also invisible, but that are what motivate us to do things and create things.
Right, right.
And without which we wouldn't even exist. So,
exactly.
So it couldn't be more important than that. And of course, the modern science, not so modern anymore, has got all that wrong. I mean, as we said before, they think that it's the cart that pushes the horse forward.
Yes, it's quite primitive.
But well, we are now discovering the truth, I think, more and more people are becoming aware of and this is really what I am all about, is trying to teach people awareness of this invisible reality, and how we can participate in creation. We're all little co-creators of the universe, and we all have a role to play. And it's my conviction, my insight. It's an absolute knowledge, I believe, that nothing happens by chance.
Right.
There is an intention and a purpose behind everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that each and every one of us has a purpose in life, a life mission, as it were. However modest it may seem when we look at it through materialistic eyeglasses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yet, even the smallest role in a play is there for a reason. And even the actor, even if the actor only appears for a few seconds and doesn't utter a single word, his appearance may be crucial for the understanding or outcome of the play.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's a wonderful analogy. And, you know, we're so used to looking at things through the materialistic lens that we it's difficult to see that we are each so importantly vital to everything that's going on. And I like your analogy of the play, and there's one also of a symphony. Right now, it would appear from what we see in the world going on that people are not aligned with a higher intention, and they're not aligned with each other's intentions. And so we have a cacophony of sound rather than a harmonic, beautifully played symphony. It seems that we're just kind of tuning up our instruments, but it's we're getting awfully close to the time when we need to actually perform, you know?
Yes, it's quite true. This is, of course, has something to do, I think, although in an orchestra, everybody has a particular instrument and part to play, and it has to be harmonic, of course, and they have to play together. But we also have this movement now that I think is getting stronger and stronger and is so crucial, which is summarized in the motto of "We are all one," meaning that you know we well, I suppose in a way this is another way of expressing the golden rule, that whatever you do to anybody else, you do it to yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the whole idea that we have enemies is really, if you look at the world in through the lens of a unified field, there can't be any enemies. Everything is one energy or one spirit. So when you, and in fact, I watched Avatar last night for the first time, and it really beautifully portrays the difference in these energies, and it's a wonderful movie. And another thing, Carl Coleman.
What was the movie? Sorry, what was the movie? Did you say
the movie Avatar by James Cameron?
Oh yeah, yes, yeah, I saw it. It's marvelous.
Isn't it wonderful? And
yes.
And that the way that they treated light and spirit and the interconnectedness and the communications, that's probably the way things really work, you know. And the indigenous tribes, which were murdered off for land. And so on and so forth, which seems to be the pattern that recurs, they knew what they were talking about. They were connected, and they had stories that they carried on for generations. So I think that's a good sign that a movie like that can be made and is so popular and is like the creation of our new myth that we miss so much.
Mm. Well, because it had this... spectacular 3D technology also, which helped, I suppose. But it's true, it was a very good movie, yes.
Well, one of the things that we kind of brushed up on is something that Carl Coleman is putting together now. And July 17th and 18th, he is creating a conscious convergence. And if you go to his site, he's going to be on the show in, I think, June 15th. But the Conscious Convergence is about us now creating a shared intention for the planet to actually become one. And so so many communities have their own intent and their own goals and so on. So we're actually moving consciously towards creating the unity and the peace and the transparency and the truth that we crave and thrive on so well.
Yes, it's true. The crux of the matter, I suppose, is to get enough people to join and to become conscious about this, to become aware.
Mm-hmm.
Still, we are in minority, I believe, but it's a matter of critical mass, isn't it?
Well, the 100 monkey theory, yes.
And I, well, there's some people that say if we reach 10%, you know,
we've done it.
We have succeeded. I don't know how true that is, but at least, but it is happening.
It is happening.
Yes, I think so.
And I think that there may also be impulses from the higher realms, or from, you can call it what you like. You can use the God word or higher power or at the soul level or whatever you want to call it, that is being impulsed to move us instantaneously into a full conscious state. So we're not living in a veiled condition in ignorance of who we are and of our own nature and reality. So,
yes.
Well, we have just a minute left or two. Do you have any parting thoughts for us that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Well, I don't know what to say. I do believe that we all have to become much more conscious and aware, and of course we have to put a stop to the conspiracies, shall we call it, from somebody said the man, the people behind the curtain. I see this, that it can happen in like this. We already are getting the information through the internet and through connecting. And of course, Irvin Laszlo talks about a global brain being created through this connection. And the second revolution, that is a revolution, of course, and the total paradigm shift. The second stage of that I see as when we all, everybody, gets independent on energy, produces his or her own energy, free and clean at home for all their needs and for transport. And then the third thing is to become independent of the global food industry that produces junk food and keeps us unhealthy.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Jens, we're out of time, and it was a pleasure speaking with you and an honor to have this time together, and I wish you all the best on your new book, Cracking the Rainbow Code. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
All right. All right. Good night, Dr. Jens, and good night, everybody listening. Bye-bye.